Good morning. Good morning. Hi, folks. My name is Frank Ancharski. I'm with Club One, and I have the distinct pleasure of introducing you guys to our wonderful speaker today. I've known Bill a long, long time, way back when he was on the East Coast, from his beginnings in originally in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and got a chance to know Bill with Mid-Atlantic Club Managers Association called MACMA, Regional IRSA Association. He's had a distinguished career, certainly on the East Coast, with places like Sport and Health, amongst others. He's an international speaker and now president and COO of our company, Club One. Married to his sweetheart, Adrian, and their three beautiful children, as you can see up there. I'd also want to just give you a quick commercial. We now have in front of us the chairman-elect of IRSA, Bill McBride, and let's give him a nice West Coast welcome. Bill?
Good morning. Can you hear me okay? Is that too loud? We've got an hour today, and I move around a bit. I'm going to try and keep it energetic. We're going to go through a lot of content. The deck that I have up here is... let me turn this down just a little bit. The deck that I have up here is completely available to you via email. If you leave me a business card, I'll shoot you the full deck so you don't have to take any notes. There's also the presentation on the IRSA handout site, but that's an abbreviated version. So if you want the full slides, just leave me a business card or email, and we'll get that out to you. If you'd be kind enough to turn your cell phones to the highest possible ringing setting, then one that has the most calls during this presentation wins. After the presentation and as you go through IRSA Week, we'd like you to fill out evaluations on every speaker so that the speakers can get better, so IRSA can do a better job of picking content and making sure year after year the program improves so you're getting the most value. Any questions before we start? This presentation is about the member experience, which translates into how you design that experience, and which translates into how do you really approach your people. So we're going to go through a lot. I've got 3 hours of content here, so some of the slides I'm going to zip through pretty quickly, so you have those in the handout. So if I go very fast through some stuff, don't think that it's an accident. I just want to make sure that that we get to the stuff that's most pertinent in the hour. Sound good? We all face challenges. This is an actual letter written in 1968, and it's written by a guy named Will Sparks to the President of the United States. Mr. President, you will be happy to know that the GSA has corrected the problem of the Pentagon elevator. When 13 of us were stuck in it, the sign said capacity 15. They have changed the sign. Now it says capacity 12. They are debating whether to make it 10. So this is problem solving at its best, right? So evidently the president got locked in the elevator. And rather than redesign, correct, they came up with a new sign. How many of you have members that want you to put signs up about every possible infraction that can be managed? You know, I hate signs. You know, signs are bad. How many of you have attention members? Thank you management on your signs. Don't answer that because I hate that too. Attention members, they know their members and they assume that somebody in charge is the one putting up the signs. So signs are another example of the member experience and how you design how people behave and act in your club. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. As most of you, I love this industry. It's very simple. It's not easy, but it's very simple. Treat people right, deliver a great product. There's no hazardous materials. You're doing good for society. And it's very engaging. But the last several years, I felt like this. I felt like, you know, I'm churning. How do I sell enough to cover my attrition? How do I grow? And so this is just an example of what some of us have gone through in the recession, dealing with our clubs and growing our businesses. It seems some days insurmountable. So today we're going to look at a few things. We're going to look at the industry as a whole, and we're going to look at people, product, and position for running a successful enterprise. Society continues to evolve. And we all know the obesity epidemic. We all know sedentary lifestyles. And we all know the critical role we can play as part of that solution. So if you want to be a part of the medical continuum, that requires another thought process of the experience you're trying to deliver. People are consuming a lot, and it's our job to keep them exercising, right? We are activity centers. So what are we trying to accomplish in the design of our programs? These are just gratuitous shots of my kids because I find them to be adorable. So what's going on now with activity is pretty much this. Still the number one activity and always will be is mobility, walking, outdoor walking. That's still the biggest solution for most people to approach their activity. Treadmill, running, jogging, and this is kind of the slope of where people are participating with regard to cardiovascular exercise. Now, I wanted to share with you a little bit about our operations so you can kind of understand where I'm speaking from. Club One has 17 commercial fitness centers at a price point between $65 and $100 a month. They're in San Francisco and San Diego. Then we manage 2 medical fitness centers. We manage 7 Jewish community centers, and we manage about 60 corporate fitness centers. We also manage some stuff that's branded for other people that's commercially operated for dues membership. So in 2011, here was my last 4 years of net membership on my clubs older than 5 years, okay? 2008, I lost 934 members for the year. 2009, 1,351. 10, 177. And 11, I finally was back in positive territory. We gained 277 members. We manage a lot of stuff for these other categories. Last year, we gained in our community center 779, 792 in our medical, and other managed 594. So last year, we started to see some good growth again, okay? Did you guys experience net gains in 2011? Do you feel like it's getting a lot better now? What was the worst year for you, 9 or 10? 9 was our worst year in net membership, but with the trailing dues revenue, it became 10 in actual financials, right? So we're starting to see some improvements. This year, we are 478 members positive in our clubs over 5 years, which represents about 14 clubs. Now, I only tell you that because I want to frame the conversation that we're all dealing with regard to net membership growth. We're seeing more people buying. We're seeing over the last 4 years continued improvement in attrition or continued improvement in retention. And so now's an opportunity to stay focused on that. Typically, our members and our staff look at life this way. They decide what they want to have, and then they decide, what do I need to do to get that? And they hope it works out. How many of you folks are married? Show of hands. Okay. How many people on the day they got married wanted to have a happy marriage? How many people, if you gave them a quiz of here's what it takes to have a happy marriage, be considerate, be faithful, be loyal, be communicative, be thoughtful. If you had to take a multiple choice test to determine the traits that go into having a happy marriage, how many of you folks would be able to pass that test from a knowledge point of view? Really? That's all? We'd all pass the test, right? We know what it takes to have a happy marriage. How many people that want to have a happy marriage the day they're married, know what to do to have a happy marriage, have a happy marriage? Now, I know all you guys do, and I wasn't going to call you out, but 50% of people get divorced, 60% second marriage divorce, and I don't know about you, but I know a few people that are married that aren't happy. You know any of those people? So the model doesn't work, right? I want to have this, I should do this. How do you have a happy marriage? What do you got to do to have a happy marriage? Well, you got to change the paradigm. You got to be a great spouse, right? You can't be somebody that wants to have a happy marriage. You've got to be a great spouse. You're a great spouse, you do what great spouses do, and you have what great spouses have, happy marriages. The same thing with obesity, right? How many of you have worked with a client and helped them lose significant weight only to see them gain the weight back? Why? Because they wanted to have weight loss, they got on a program to do it, but they never saw themselves as a fit, healthy individual. They saw themselves as an overweight person that happened to be thin right now, right? And what's the body do? What's the mind do? It corrects. It will always take you back to how you see yourself, right? Now, what's the point in all this? The point in all this is simply that with staff and with members, getting to the why. I'd rather have you start looking at yourself as a fit, healthy person than somebody that has this unsurmountable goal that may or may not be achievable in short order. Does that make sense? It's a paradigm shift in coaching. The same thing works with staff. If I want to have happy, friendly staff, what do I have to do? I have to hire people that are personally happy, friendly people. I can't train them to be that way. So when we're looking at designing the member experience and working with our clients and our members, thinking about this paradigm, I found to be very helpful. If I can get my members to start seeing themselves as fit, healthy individuals, the track record and success is going to be a lot quicker than somebody with just a goal. Make sense? There's three tenets that I believe in with regard to operating profitable, successful clubs. And the first one is clarity of direction. We have a business model that relies solely on people doing what they do with our clientele. You've got a pretty facility, box, clean, all that. But the bottom line is your people are your product, right? So having clarity of direction around what they're executing against is tenet number one. The second tenet is humility and openness to learn. I believe that this industry is extremely broken. We have attrition rates. If you're a really good operator, you got a 35% attrition rate, a 30% attrition rate. That's still a lot of your membership base churning year after year. You only have 30%, 25%, 20% of the population using the clubs. So we haven't penetrated the population as a viable solution. We haven't been able to keep a lot of our members engaged. We have members that are there, but not regular and achieving the results. So I believe that we all have to be humble and open and continuously learning how to come up with a new paradigm and a new approach to this health crisis that our population is facing. And the third tenet I like to think about in framing how I approach things is operate as if you're the best. Be the best from the be to have paradigm. Operate as if you are the best health club operator on the planet. Why is that important? And it's not hubris. It's simply that you will make better decisions if you're operating from that place. What would the best health club operator do in this situation? How would the best health club operator react in this situation? It makes for a very clear way of executing. So those are three tenets that I think help me with our teams in framing how we deliver for the best for our members. Obviously, the people piece, people determine the potential of your team. If you are a 7 or 8 in skill set as a manager and leader, you're not going to be able to have 9s and 10s work for you. Relationships determine the morale of the team. Structure determines the size. Vision determines the direction. But the ultimate success is the leadership. You can go into a club and interview the leader, the general manager or the director, and in short order, you can determine what's going on in that club. Um, With technology, more and more people are captive to email. How many of you are addicted to your iPhone and your BlackBerry? I mean, it's sick, right? You're in an elevator. You're this. You're at a restaurant, right? And that's happening to our staff and our general managers, too. They're in their office more. They're trying to keep up. They feel a sense of anxiety when they get a big stack of emails, right? So they're constantly migrating back to that box. And that's not where the business happens, right? The business happens out on the floor. So great managers spend the majority of the time with the teams. So when we talk about this people piece is where we're going to start. Obviously, selecting good people and being clear about the expectations. But there's got to be a mutual respect there. We all know that. So how do we approach that? How many of you have seen this GE performance grid before? So what this performance grid, it allows you to do a quick evaluation on your employees. And what I want you to do right now is I want you to draw that if you have paper and pen. What you have on the left is values. Values, how are these people with regard to your core vision, your mission, your value system, your character? And the bottom is performance. So the top right is somebody that's high values. They're a great team player. They believe in your product. They're a brand ambassador. And they're a high performer. They're probably the people that you've brought to URSA with you. Okay? They're the superstar. How do you I want you to take that box and I want you to put the initials of some of your team members in that box that are your superstars. They're high values. They're high performers. Got it? On the bottom left, low values, low performers. These are the people that you can't wait to wake up tomorrow morning and terminate. Right? These people just aren't very good. Right? Bottom right, high performers, but not team players. They don't comply with the procedures and they don't play well with others. And they're prima donnas or superstars. They're great, but what happens to those folks? They're a cancer, right? They pollute the rest of the team. Even if they're top producers, they're affecting the production of the rest of the group. And then what do you do with the top left? High values, low performers. These are the people that you just love them to death. You can't imagine your club not having them. But they're almost worthless. Right? They just can't do a good job for you. The front desk person that's sweet, but can't multitask. Right? Those type of people. So once you put the initials of all those people from your teams in those boxes, and think about them for just a second. Upper right is superstars. High values, high performers. Lower left is can't get out of their own way. They're not fun to be around and they perform poorly. Top left, high values, low performers. Great people, not very good at their jobs. Bottom right, great performers, but you can't stand to be around them and everybody hates them. Got it? So what do? The bottom left, you terminate quickly. The top right, what do for those people? Volunteers? What? Train them. Top right are superstars that are great values. You train them more. You keep supporting them. You basically give them a big kiss and a hug and love them. You support them and stay out of their way. Top left, high values, low performer, what do with them? Train them. Get them in a new job. Even if you have to get them in a new job somewhere else, right? Because they're never going to get promoted. They're never going to succeed in their career. You're holding them back by not getting them in the right position. And then what do with the troubled children? What do with the ones that are great performers but just completely pains to deal with, not on the team? Shoot them. No, that's illegal in most states. You put them on a 90-day coaching program, and if you can't get them right in 90 days, you've got to move them out. Because as hard as it is to get rid of that person that sells 50-plus memberships or that person that sells $8,000 a month in personal training, they are hurting you more than they're helping you. So that is a simple way that I look at where are my team members? Who needs what from a perspective of coaching, from a perspective of reviews? And my review template is pretty simple. I use a T-bar review. Once a year, what do I like? What do I want to see more of? It's a very simple review process. You do this, 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 this well. I'd like you to get going on this, 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 and this. Without clarity of direction, you won't get the best of your people and they won't continue to develop and grow. Once you have defined that, then they're going to fall into one of these six buckets. Some of your employees are going to need better goal setting. Some of your employees are going to need more training. Some of your employees are going to have to do some relationship cleanup. You're going to have to build that trust. Some are going to need some type of motivation. You're going to have to find their triggers and what motivates them. Some are going to need continuous measurement and monitoring of performance and performance management. And some are just going to want more feedback. But those three little documents, that three-step process, I find to be a very effective way to identify where my team is, easily review them without a lot of ambiguous ones, twos, threes, fours, fives, what does it mean, what do I do, and then where do they fall in the coaching continuum. So that having that serious of approach sets a tone for your club of professionalism and execution. So assuming you get the right people on the bus, you support them and manage them, the next thing is how do we deal with our members, right? How many of you read the book Demand? Anybody read the book Demand? It's a very good book. And what Demand is about is creating demand. And it's a very good book for our industry because our industry is trying to create demand. So in the book Demand, there's a process called the hassle map that every person has a reluctance to do things based on how much hassle is involved. So when you look at your product, how do you reduce the hassle involved? How do you make it easier for people to interact? How do you make it easier to join? How do you make it easier to engage? There's a new paradigm in information consumption going on with our consumers. Before, it was push, right? We pushed information to members. We pushed information to prospects. Here, join, email, this. Here's our newsletter. It was all push, 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 right? Then we moved into this new paradigm where people were pulling the information. People were going and getting the information that's applicable to them and pulling that from the source. What's going to happen next is the information is just going to be there. It's going to be virtually there when they want it. For example, how many of you use iPads? How many of you use a product called an application called Zite, Z-I-T-E? So Zite is a free application on the iPad. It's a daily newspaper that comes to you based on who you are. You check a bunch of boxes of what you're interested in: politics, health and fitness, technology, gadgets. And then every day it scours the web and delivers a magazine to you. All right. The articles on the magazine have a little rating button. Like, do you like this article, yes or no? Over time, the site learns what sources you like the most and what articles you like the most, what authors you like the most, and it learns your behavior. So you go to it, and now you get everything you want to know from a news point of view in sources you would never have imagined, in a very personalized fashion that's just there. It's not being pushed to you. You're not pulling it. You hit the button and it's just there. Now, an example of this, when Steve Jobs died, I'm reading my Zeit and I have technology as one of my interests. So articles about Steve Jobs' career show up. Well, one of the articles had a video link to his commencement address at Stanford University. I clicked the link and I watched the video right from my magazine. I would have never seen that video of Steve Jobs' commencement address at Stanford University had I not had Zeit and the information just been there. You follow me? So I don't even know what I don't know, but with this product, I know a lot more and I'm learning and finding interest. If I sat at a terminal with Google and tried to just Google all the things that I get on that, I would never find the content that's applicable to me in a fashion that I could use. That's what's happening in the world. Information has got to be there for me, relevant to me, personalized for me, that I can use. And this site pulls from Harvard Business Review, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, bloggers. I mean, it pulls from all types of sources. So there's a paradigm change in information. Why do you care? Well, you care for a lot of reasons. You care for how you communicate with your employees. You care for how you communicate with your members. And you care for how you communicate with your prospects. So when you talk about this experiential product that we're dealing with, what goes on into the product? For me, I break it down into you've got an operating model, and everything you do is retention. Everything you do is sales. Everything you do is your product. So if I break down the whole process, we put it into certain buckets. There's an enrollment process. There's an onboarding process to get the member up to speed. There's a connection to get the member plugged into their area, right, that they're going to belong in. And then there's support of the at-risk members. How many people that start exercise fail? It's usually not a, let me just join a club, and from now on I'm an exerciser. There's many fits and starts. Community and loyalty. So these are the processes that I break down in how we design the member experience. Enrollments, the sales and enrollment process, the marketing process, getting people started the right way. Onboarding's the first 30 days of getting them plugged in. Connections, the 30 to 90 days where they're fitting into their area of play and where they belong. Supportive intervention is you got to know when your members fall off. You got to know when they drop out so you can intervene. What we like to do with the intervention is if your behavior changes and you stop using the club, we give you 5 weeks to self-correct, and then we intervene and go after you. And I give the 5 weeks for false positives. People take vacations, they get sick, their kids are involved in something. But 12 weeks after your behavior changes, declining in usage, you typically make a decision to quit. So if my behavior changes as a member, and I capture that at 5 weeks, I have 7 weeks to save them before they get to the decision of quitting. Does that make sense? Because you don't want them to stop coming to the club. You know that things get in the way. You know that that this is not easy. How many of you are avid exercisers? You're weird. You're very weird. You're a different group. You're not normal. Normal people don't love exercise. And by normal, I'm just going with the majority. But we call it really cool things. We call it training. And we call it working out. I don't know about you, but anything that has the word work in it immediately sends a red flag for me. Kids play, but then we want adults to work out and train, right? We got to soften our approach. And when I say we, I'm talking about Club One and our approach. But we want it to be an area of play. We want people to have fun and play. We want to have engagement, obviously, and we want people to feel really good about the product. Now, what's the end goal we're looking at? The end goal is we want people to belong to a lifestyle and a community, right? So they don't leave and they belong here and they're raving fans. There's a situation with regard to relationships. All of us have relationships. How many of you have ever been cut off on the freeway by another driver? Come on, show of hands. How many of you maybe said a curse word or made a hand gesture? I love the honesty. Because people, you know, nothing more annoying than a discourteous, terrible driver that affects your day, right? Now, how many of you have inadvertently ever cut somebody else off? Bunch of hypocrites. Right? So now imagine that person that cuts you off and you look at him and it's your grandmother or your grandmother's friend or a close family friend or somebody like that. Do you still feel the same sense of anger? And the ones that do, I'd like to have a special session for you afterward. But if you don't feel the same sense of anger, right? What goes through your mind? Oh my God, she's losing her eyesight. Grandma almost got in an accident. I'm worried about her. Oh, I hope she's not, man, she's still safe to drive. It's a different paradigm, right? You think of it differently. Why do you think of it differently? You think of it differently because you're in a relationship with her, because you love her, right? So the same thing goes on in our clubs, right? How much courtesy or benefit of the doubt do you give a stranger? Very little. How much courtesy do you give somebody that you're cordial with and casual with? A little bit more. Somebody that you're friends with, they get a fair amount, right? And somebody you're in a committed relationship, they get a lot, right? And so the same thing with our members. If you have a member that hates you, they're complaining about everything. You can't do anything right. Do you have any of those members? And they're not bad people. They're just probably more like strangers. They view you as somebody they don't really have a relationship with. How many of you have had those members that if your front desk person didn't show, they would jump behind the front desk and check people in? You know who I'm talking about, right? Why do they do that? Because they're in a committed relationship with you, right? And so the whole member experience is all about what level of relationship do you have with your members? Are they your friends? Are you in a committed relationship? Are you strangers? Or are you just casually cordial with one another? And if you look at this concept with how your business operates as an entity around that relationship, you'll come up with different designed experiences in how you create your processes and systems. It'll be a whole different shift beyond saying hi and saying goodbye if your goal is committed relationship with your members. Now, people leave clubs for lots of reasons. 68% of people that leave, though, are leaving businesses because of attitude indifference by the staff. They just don't think your staff cares about them. They are strangers. You with me? So people aren't leaving because your steam room broke. People aren't leaving because you messed up on their EFT billing. People leave because they don't feel appreciated. They don't feel loved. They don't feel wanted. That's why they're leaving. And when you look at other issues with people and how they express themselves, do any of you have members that complain? So here's a graph of unhappy members that remain faithful to your brand. If they have a complaint and you quickly resolve it, they are more faithful than any other category. If you resolve it but slowly, they're more faithful than the other groups, but not as faithful as if you solve it quickly. If you don't resolve it, they're still more faithful than people that never complain. And why are people that never complain the least faithful? Because they're strangers and they just don't care about you. They don't care enough to even complain. So when you look at this expectation line, I expect you to do X and things go wrong and you quickly repair them, you build brand loyalty, right? If an airline lost your bags, and you'd be very upset, right? It's a terrible airline. They're awful. They lost my bags. I need my underwear, right? But if they said, we found your bag, here's a $100 voucher, and we'll deliver your bag to the hotel within an hour, what's your impression of the airline? Skyrockets, right? Because they quickly resolved your complaints, you thought poorly, and then they flip it. So the moral of the story is, if your club is perfect and doesn't have anything going wrong, you should manufacture things to go wrong so that you could quickly fix them and gain brand loyalty. Now, we're lucky enough in our industry that we don't have to do that. There's enough that goes wrong by itself. So why is this important to a session you came to about the member experience? Well, it's important because if you know that this is how people behave, how are you designing the experience so your staff can quickly resolve things? How many of you know the top 10 complaints that you get year after year from your members? Have you spent time on what are we going to do when these top 10 things happen? And does everybody on staff know what to do when these top 10 things happen and go wrong? If you spend that amount of time, this goes wrong, here's the experience we're going to deliver. And you design that and spend some time on that, you'll dramatically change how your club operates. Because the value proposition to the member is what they're looking for. They're looking for, where do I find an intersection of the product being useful usable and desirable. And what does that mean? Our product's pretty useful, right? It's a health club and people need activity, and it's a pretty useful product. Is it usable though? Is it easy to use? Does it have a big hassle map, or is it just seamless? Do you make it difficult for people? And by that, you'll see some models that are doing kiosk enrollment, online enrollment only, all right? I join online, I print out my card, I come in, I don't even need a card, I have an application that my membership card's on my phone, right? There's a progression of making it easier and easier and easier for people to deal with our product. People want to be, you know, there's a new phrase out there called the quantified self. People want to manage their own health care, their own, every aspect of their life. They want to manage that themselves. So this is a different aspect. So the goal is to have a useful product, and then that personality, that sex appeal, that desirability. And when you get all three of those things right, that's when it's the sweet spot. That's when you've got it figured out. So in designing this member experience, there's a formula called Lewin's equation. And what Lewin's equation said is that behavior is a function of a person in their environment. For example, this environment was orchestrated for you to come in, sit down, facing me, be quiet when I started talking, and pay attention and not disrupt the other folks. Now, other than a gentleman over here, everybody's complied with that plan, right? So you didn't come in and go, let me turn my chair the other way. Let me move and sit over here in the middle of the aisle. You behaved exactly like this environment dictated that you would behave. Make sense? Have you heard of the experiment with the prison guards, where they did two groups of people? They were students. They put some as guards and some as prisoners. And within a few short weeks, they had to abort the test and the experiment because the guards were being so abusive to the prisoners. These were upstanding young college people with good moral fiber. But in a group, they changed and behaved differently than they would have acted individually. Now, I'm not excusing personal accountability by any means, but there is a mob mentality that we've all seen that causes people to get caught up in something that's different and unique than what they would do on their own. Do you understand what I'm saying? So what is the point? Well, the point is that you can do that in your clubs. For example, if you wanted your group fitness people to introduce themselves and have more camaraderie in class and get to know one another, you could actually design that in your class format if you wanted to. Right? You would think, okay, if I want them to know each other, how can I do that? You could do that. All right? And you may call those classes differently. They may be on the schedule, community cardio, where there is going to be an introduction of each other, right? So people that don't want to deal with that don't have. But there's things, and I'm not advocating that, for example, but I'm advocating thinking through exactly what you want to happen. We use a guest registration card, as probably most of you do. We control the tour. Everything's mapped out. This is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. And you go through that process. And at the end, you usually decide to buy a membership because the process brings you down that path to be able to support you in your goals. So this just says that we really want to spend time thinking about what the behavior you want your members to have and designing around that behavior in a much more methodical way. So what areas of our clubs need to be designed? Because we leave a lot to chance as an industry. I mean, you've got sales, you've got tennis, fitness, operations, dance, youth programs, racquetball, childcare, small group training. You've got all this stuff. How much have you spent and mapped out the optimal experience of each one of these things? I mean, put some serious thought into it. What do you want to happen in all these things? versus hiring somebody and letting them just run a program that may or may not get you to that experience. The concept here is just kind of backing up and thinking about what you're trying to accomplish, right? Because our product is extremely important. It's extremely viable. It's extremely necessary. If I'm talking about the sales process as an example of an area that requires design, just to take one, we know, for example, that there are six things that go through people's minds when they're buying a health club membership. Am I going to really have time or commit to the time to do this? Do I need this? Does it feel right? Does the temperature feel right? Is the music right? Is the lighting right? Do I feel good when I go in there? Is the facility convenient and have what I need? Is my significant other going to support me in this decision? And is it worth what they're asking me to pay? Right? These are what people think about when they're buying a health club membership. So if I want the exercise to be an exercise of a party, an exchange in sales where both parties win, right, versus a transaction, then I've got to think through how to design that. Most things people buy are transactions. You go online, you buy something, it's a transaction, it's done. What do you look for when you go online to buy something? The lowest price, right? We don't want our industry to get down to just a commodity of the lowest price. So in our case, in your case, it's a relationship. Person's got to feel good about the price, and it can't be just about the price. It's got to be we both win. So here's the design of our sales process, and I only share this as just one department to take a look at. But when you come in or interface with us, you either call us or you walk in. We have an appointment set or you're there. When you come in, we have a guest registration card that you fill out so we know your interest. We send everybody that comes into our clubs an email thanking them for showing up and following up with them. We don't send them a thank you card. Why? Because I want the process to mandate that everybody gives their email address. Okay? When you join, you get a thank you card, handwritten by the person. We do a needs analysis tour. We present in a certain manner, all mapped out. We have a process with paperwork. We have a process with referral. We have a process with the orientation and program design. And we have a process to all these aspects. There's nothing left to chance. This is how it goes. And that reduces error. It increases the brand consistency. When people refer somebody else, they know exactly what to tell them is going to happen. And you can do that with virtually every department. And at the end of the day, you will have a much higher level of execution. Here's our guest registration card. We all have them. Nothing particularly special about this one, except that middle box of interest allows us to kind of make some assumptions about what type of person you are. A jumpstart person for us is somebody that likes group fitness, that goes in and out of exercise. They like the camaraderie and energy. Fitness enthusiast is people like you. It's a lifestyle. They're on it all the time. Energy balance is people that want to lose weight. And mind-body are people that have a higher degree of interest in massage, yoga, Pilates, and some of the other holistic approaches to health and fitness. So we can make some assumptions right from the guest point of view and tailor the presentation and the offering around those quick assumptions about what type of person they are. The more information you know, the more relevant your messaging will be. People don't want information overload. We're bombarded with data. We're bombarded with messaging. And we need to be able to get information that only is relevant to us. We no longer have the mind capacity based on the quantity of information to sort through and figure it out. It's just got to be right. And it's got to be right in front of us. When people make these decisions about your product, they're doing a comparison. They have alignable differences that they can compare things to, and they have non-aligable differences. For example, when you think about buying something, you typically think about what your alternatives are as close to that product as possible. You don't usually buy things. There are examples, but you don't usually buy things in a vacuum. You usually have a frame of reference. There's an actual study on this that if two guys go to a bar and one guy is a little less attractive, a little less polished, a little less best dressed than the other guy, but they're similar in build and they go there together, the more attractive of the two is perceived to be exponentially more attractive when rated by women as compared to when he's rated by himself. Do you follow me? That when you frame something against something else, you're making the better of two choices. And you typically have a higher level of judgment about that than you would about one choice. That may have been a little bit confusing. But the point is a lot of our people are comparing us to other products and other alternatives. And how do you use that process to align your differences to tell your story so that you're put in the best possible light? So when you're dealing with competitors, you want to compare elements that you have aligned. They have this, we have this, ours is better. When you have non-aligned differences, you've got to offer alternatives. For example, if your competitor had a pool and you didn't have a pool, you're not going to be able to align that. So what are you going to do that's just as cool as a pool that your competitors don't have so you can negate that non-alignable difference? Does that make sense? And a lot of times we do competitive analysis, but what do we do with that information? Do we come back and change the way we portray our information and change the way we do our product offering? Knowing how people make decisions and comparisons goes a long way in how you design your experience. Another interesting thing is that three offerings are more effective than two. There's an example in a book, Predictably Irrational, that talks about the Financial Times. Option one was print only. You could buy the print only subscription for the Financial Times. Option two was print and online. And option three was online only. The price points were print only for $129, print and online for $149, and online only for, I believe it was, $129. Which one did they buy? They bought the middle one, 85% of the time or so. When you took out the bottom option, everybody bought print 80-something percent of the time. So people, for no rational reason, bought number two when there were three choices, but bought number one when the third choice was removed. Why? Felt like the value of the two was so compelling based on the way the other two were portrayed. Right? I only wanted print, and I'm only going to buy print, but now I've got this unbelievable value of what print and online are together. That's a better deal. It's totally irrational, but predictable. So, what are the options? How are you portraying that? Some other research along the same lines is how we refer to people. When you refer to people as a noun, you get higher response rates versus referring to them with a verb. And there was some tests about, would you let us put a sign in your front yard about getting people voting? And then they did it with a noun, dear civic-minded voter. They attached an identity to the person that allowed them to associate with whatever was being asked in a very positive manner. Why does that matter in the design experience? Well, it matters because people have insecurities and fears about our product coming in sometimes. So if you refer to them in a way that helps them identify as already being accepted, you will get more comfort from them in making this decision. For example, what's your name? George. George, welcome to the club. By you being here, it's pretty obvious that you're an individual that's committed to your health and well-being. And so congratulations on that. I'm going to refer to George as an exerciser and as a fitness-minded person throughout my tour in a noun-like fashion. So he knows that he's accepted here and that he belongs here, and he's not a guy looking to see if he's going to be. Does that make sense? And so I'm not trying to go too psycho-babble on you, but these little things in designing the experience translate into huge results with regard to what you're creating. And I think that as we learn more and more about the customer, it's worthy to do that. The brand emotions that we're trying to focus on is we want people to feel that we're friendly and nice, warm and accepting, comforting and supporting, considerate of you and your circumstance, happy, safe, and the real deal. Those are the things that we want people to walk away from our brand and experience. Those are the things that we want to make sure our experience is designed to support. So as you look back at creating your experiences, think about all those areas that you have that touch people and that you want to control. And there's a lot more now than the physical plant. There's your online presence. There's all your communications. There's your value proposition. There's direct mail. There's in-club marketing. Does all that come together in a manner that tells your story the way you want your story told? When you look at marketing, we used to be an organization that focused on facilities, pretty pictures of clubs and features. We have a very cool health club. Look at all the stuff in it. We were very text-heavy with bullet points of all the offerings. Then we started advertising programs and we got cool people. They're certified. Then we started going, hey, we're really about connection and wellness and friendliness. Then we took it up to, hey, it's results-based. You join here, you're going to have the highest probability of success and results. Now, marketing utopia is we will deliver appropriate, specific little solutions in real time for you. Okay? You won't have to go through barriers. The solution's going to be in real time. That's a different approach than facilities-based. For example, right now what's resonating, I'm getting the same direct mail results that I got in 2006 and 7. Unbelievable. Because I stripped out all the copy. It's all visually based. It's all segmented by who it goes to in a very sophisticated manner. And I'm getting back to the response rates that we haven't seen in years and years and years, because people are consuming information differently. They don't want a lot of text and so forth. So when you're doing this analysis of your club and working with your teams, you really want to get the story right. How much time have you spent with your staff on the elevator pitch of your club? Do they know what's special about your club, and can they get in there and tell that to anybody that will listen? Is it a consistent message? So another thing I would recommend is spending time having people practice and learn and share what their elevator pitch is with regard to your facility, and put that messaging into a way that represents the experiences that you want to do. And you'll get an enormous amount of consistency and differentiation that you wouldn't get by looking at it from the outside. Tomorrow we're going to do a session, or Saturday morning we're going to do a session on social media. But I want to just bring this one slide up as we close up here, that there's a lot going on in the social media world right now. And this was a fun way to tell you what some of these things do, right? Twitter, I'm eating a donut. Facebook, I like donuts. Foursquare, this is where I eat donuts. Instagram, here's a vintage photo of my donut. YouTube, here I am eating a donut. LinkedIn, my skills include donut eating. Pinterest, Here's a donut recipe. Last FM, now listening to donuts. Internet radio, Google Plus. For those of you that have been watching Google Plus, this competition with Facebook, I'm a Google employee who eats donuts. Saturday, we're going to talk a lot about all the vehicles with social media. It fits into this presentation in a manner that, that you have a whole nother existence in the virtual world with regard to your brand, your relationship to your members, and your reputation. So for those of you that are interested in the social media aspect, I invite you to join us Saturday morning. I'd like to just close by asking if I can take any questions. Remember that if you want the presentation, bring me your business card, and I'll send that out to you. I appreciate your time this morning. Enjoy your Ursa show. Any questions?